The House Committee on Revenue for Thursday, April 12th will come to order. We have three public hearings scheduled for today, and with that, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3246. Chris.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3246 creates a new credit against personal and corporate income or excise taxes for qualified investments. The bill defines qualified investment as new machinery, not used, or equipment that is used for the production of income and installed in a facility in Oregon. The original draft of the bill requires the Department of Revenue to certify the credits. It does place limits on the credit, but those limits are blank. Right now, there would be a percentage amount that is blank, percentage of the qualified investment, and then there is a space for a dollar limit on the credit per taxpayer, and that is currently blank. The bill also specifies that DOR may not certify more than $30 million of credits in a given biennium. There is a four-year carry forward. It applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2008, but it does allow the DOR to certify credits beginning July 1, 2007, and any credits certified in the last half of 2007 would be considered as being certified in 2008, so taxpayers could use that against their 2008 liability. And the sponsors have submitted a -1 amendment, which you have in front of you, and there are two changes that the amendment makes. The first is that it defines a qualified taxpayer as a manufacturing business with 200 or fewer employees or a non-manufacturing business with 50 or fewer employees. And then it also clarifies that to be eligible for the credit, the purchase of the equipment may not result in a reduction in the number of employees, employee hours, or employee compensation. So the net effect of the amendments are to make the credit more focused.
Thank you. Any questions for Chris? I see two members present who I assume would like to be heard since they're sponsors of the bill. Representative Nathanson, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt from Clackamas County. Appreciate you hearing this bill. I think I'd like to applaud Representative Nathanson for her good work on this bill and also applaud folks from the Oregon Business Association for really birthing the whole original kind of concept and focus on a capital investment tax credit. We talk a lot about tax credits. I think, frankly, we have to acknowledge as a legislature we have a problem with tax credits. We're addicted. We love to institute new ones. We never repeal old ones. And I know that you, Mr. Chair, are committed to kind of striking that better balance in the future where we do institute new ones where they make sense and we repeal old ones when they stop to make as much sense. I think this is one of those that does make sense, and Representative Nathanson is going to get into some of the specifics, but it really is focused on smaller businesses. It really is focused on helping them make investments in their companies that will really help them to retain and grow jobs. And I think it is something that has a real opportunity for return on investment. It's also something that can be tailored based on how much we can afford. You know, it doesn't just start off with a $200 million price tag and it's kind of all or nothing. It really is something that can be tailored in a way that fits what ends up being our budget this session. But I would definitely recommend it to you and, again, commend Representative Nathanson for her good work on this bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hunt. Mr. Chair and colleagues, for the record, I'm Representative Nancy Nathanson, House District 13 in Eugene. I'm here today to urge your support for House Bill 3246. This bill creates an income tax credit for qualified investments in new machinery and equipment for Oregon's small businesses and manufacturers. You have the amendments that provide the direction regarding targeting the small business and protecting jobs. One additional amendment that may not have been completed yet is to change the word corporation to business entity to ensure that we do cover small businesses. This program will cost the state no more than $30 million and in its implementation, and there are limits placed on the amount each business may claim in a given year. Of course, the question we as lawmakers are so often asked is if the cost to the state is really worth it. I would submit that the cost to the state is relatively small for the return that we'll get on our investment. I would also submit that this is not a giveaway for big business that's already benefiting from generous tax credits and low tax liabilities. This credit is targeted at small businesses with fewer than 200 employees. Many of these companies already contribute significantly to state tax revenues in addition to the benefit they provide to the local and state economy. Since 1997, Oregon has been among the top 17 states in the country in terms of the percentage of its gross state product in manufacturing. About 15% of Oregon's output value comes from manufacturing. This includes high-tech companies, lumber and paper products producers, vehicle manufacturing, and more. And over 80% of our agricultural production is exported out of state, half of that overseas. A thriving manufacturing sector is vital to the long-term prosperity of Oregon's economy and its citizens. Manufacturing businesses in Oregon serve as an economic catalyst, generating high-wage jobs throughout the state and bringing new dollars into the state's economy that supports service industries and public services. The good news is that Oregon's small businesses and small manufacturers have done better than the national average at recovering from the devastating recessions from the earlier part of this decade. But there's a downside. There has been. There's a difficulty in taking care of those delayed investments in the necessary upgrades, for example, for aging equipment, or to implement green or sustainable new technology and innovations. For these businesses to succeed in the next decade and beyond, there's an increasing pressure to cut costs in order to maintain profitability, which often means eliminating living wage jobs to pay for the investments that were necessary for expansion and technology. As a state, we can provide small businesses with an alternative to this false choice by providing local businesses with the tools to remain competitive with large-scale and out-of-state businesses and expand in the face of these growing economic pressures. You have a letter by now, I hope you've received it, from the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce from Terry Connolly, Director of Government Affairs, and I'd like to read just one short part of that. Quote, one of the greatest challenges often faced by these businesses is having the resources on hand to invest in new machinery and equipment that is necessary to either sustain their company or to allow it to grow and expand. And the need to reinvest in machinery and equipment can often be time sensitive. Companies frequently need to move quickly in order to keep up with the market conditions or to seize upon new opportunities in the global economy. This investment allows companies to purchase equipment or machinery that improves efficiency, brings down costs, increases output, and increases profit margins. Because businesses cannot qualify for the credit if the investments result in the reduction of wages or the loss of living wage Oregon jobs, this bill encourages businesses to find creative ways to expand while maintaining a high-wage workforce. The benefit of this investment to our state is a thriving, competitive, homegrown economy, a more stable job market, and increased state revenues. The cost of not making this investment is not only economic decline and a loss of jobs, but a loss of revenue to the state that results in cuts to education, public safety, health care, and other services that Oregonians count on. Details of the implementation may not quite be worked out. I hope that the committee will carefully consider the intent and the spirit of this, and if there are technical adjustments that need to be made to implement this correctly, I would certainly welcome those and encourage you to figure out, you as the professionals with the advice that comes from staff, to figure out any appropriate adjustments that need to be made as this would be implemented. I do urge your approval of this bill, and I'd be happy to take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for the representatives?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Butler.
What happens, first this probably to staff, the question of the adjustment to the depreciation with respect to the credit. Help me with how that is mechanical. I need to go through the mechanics of that. And then what happens if the equipment is sold in year 3, 4, or 5? Do we know the equipment subject to the credit?
Well, the bill is silent on whether if the equipment is sold.
They'd still be entitled to the credit that they had taken.
Correct. It doesn't address that.
Thank you.
And then with respect to the appreciation, that's just a kind of double dipping issue where if the depreciation adjustment would be modified by the amount of the credit. And I haven't thought through the mechanics of how that would work on the tax return.
I'm still looking for that. I'll work with Deborah on that. She's here. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Other questions? Representative Broom.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be a question for staff as well. What about, I didn't hear it addressed, what about multiple capital investments? A given company, given year over multiple years, is there any limit to what a single company may claim?
Representative Broom, there is a space in the bill for that limit. It's a blank amount right now. So the policy is there, and it's left to a discussion as to what that amount would be.
Well, not necessarily a dollar amount, but so multiple, company A buys a press in year one, okay, has a certain dollar amount, and buys another press in year two, has a certain dollar amount. You're saying that they're qualified within an existing credit parameter, an existing dollar amount. They wouldn't get a separate credit on each individual investment.
Well, if you're talking about different tax years, there would be a credit certified for tax year one and a different credit for tax year two.
Okay.
So it would be within the context, as I read the bill, would be per taxpayer per year.
Okay.
So if a company bought two presses in the same year, it would be that total investment, as long as it met the other criteria, that would qualify for the credit.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, the reason you'll see the two blanks in lines 11 and 14 on the first page are really is going to have to be, both the percentage that is allowed, as well as the dollar figure in line 14, will have to be sized really to what the capacity we have in terms of, as we look at this combined with everything else we're dealing with in terms of the general fund and tax policy. If we have a lot more money available, it could be a much larger percentage. And if we don't, it would have to be smaller.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Hey, yeah, Mr. Chair, I think this is a great idea. I appreciate coming forward with it, and I noticed that my name is on it. So I knew it's doubly a good idea. But I do have some questions that, we've received that need to be answered, and I don't see them here, and that's language around how you measure and what the standards are for if they lose employees or don't gain employees, and what agency would monitor and measure that. Those are just things that I point out that aren't in here.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler.
If I may, a whole series of very excellent questions, but I think these are all doable. Mm-hmm. We'll hear from the Department of Revenue, obviously, but I there's going to be more questions where the bill is silent with regard to the disposition of the equipment in subsequent years after they've received the credit, and how do they know the equipment is still in operation in the second or third year? How does the department know that the jobs have not decreased from 180 jobs to 170 jobs as a result of the implementation of the equipment? But the goal is laudable, and the goal is quantifiable, and we have a program in Oregon that this probably ties into, and that's called the Oregon Investment Advantage. Mm-hmm. It's all OECD operated. Unfortunately, that is directed at counties where they have high unemployment and very small businesses. I say very small businesses. It's five employees up, and usually that's in small counties that 10 employees is a big business. So I think that all of these questions can be monitored. The Department of OECD has an ability to monitor those where there's a credit involved, has an ability to monitor to make sure that they have the employees still there. Don't have to be the same employees. They can monitor the employment reports. So I think this is all doable, and it's an excellent idea.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions, comments? It occurs to me, Representative Nathanson, that you raised the question of whether it's corporations or not, and I think that that's resolved on lines 15, 16, 17, 18 of the Dash 1 amendment, which I think replaces the bill, doesn't it? So I haven't been looking at the bill. I've been looking at the Dash 1. And then after that, the taxpayer is referred to as a qualified taxpayer rather than a corporation or something else. So unless I'm mistaken, I think that piece is resolved in that amendment.
Thank you. We were waiting for it yesterday afternoon, so thank you.
Well, I hadn't seen it until I sat down here today, so I'm catching up. Other things. Thank you very much. We appreciate your bringing this bill, and you can see we have some things to study.
Thanks.
Thank you. Let's see. Genoa Ingram.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. Genoa Ingram, the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce, representing approximately, you couldn't read my handwriting, could you? Approximately 70 local chambers across the state. We have looked at the bill and are here to testify in support of the concept of the bill. Research and development, that portion of the bill, we do support because we believe it will encourage new innovations and ideas to come out of our Oregon businesses, and the business and equipment portion of it because we want to make sure that our small businesses have the most, have every advantage and are able to purchase the most, the newest and the best equipment. We do believe that any funds spent will be recouped through a healthy and vital business community. We understand there is work to be done on the bill. We were made aware yesterday of the amendments, and the Oregon State Chamber of Commerce would just like the opportunity to work with the proponents on these, and for that matter, the other two bills on the agenda, which we think are also a good idea. Thank you very much.
Questions for this witness? I have one. You mentioned research and development. Is that in this bill?
Maybe I misread it. I thought that it was. If not, the other two bills would address that, and that is a big part of what we would want to support and work with the committee toward.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We are expecting another witness who is not available until 1:30. I'm sorry. Oh, Department of Revenue. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, just a few comments about the administration and implementation of the bill. Right now, the department does not have any tax credits that it is responsible for certifying. What we typically do is audit after the fact. So it could create an awkward situation if we certify a credit and then do an audit a year later and determine that the taxpayer is not allowed that credit. So if we were to have this and do the certification, I think we would do a lot of upfront work to make sure that it's accurate so we're not in that position. I believe the certification is there because there is a dollar cap on the total amount of credits that can be issued. And there are several options that you may want to consider. You may want to have another agency that does the certification. Another option would be to eliminate the certification because it is an after-the-fact certification. The taxpayer has already purchased the equipment. So that the certification, Mr. Chair, looking at page 2, lines 4 through 5, where they must indicate the date of purchase and the amount of the investment. So my reading of that is the purchase has already occurred. So rather than doing a certification, it may be simply that taxpayers claim the credits. We keep track of them as returns are filed. It's done on a first-come, first-served basis. And when $30 million is claimed, we cut them off. That could be another option if you leave it with us.
It would encourage early filing, wouldn't it?
Yes, it certainly would. Let me see. What else did I want to? Oh, and the questions about determining the employee changes, whether or not those are attributable to use of the credit. That's been mentioned already. If this did remain with the department, I assume that would be something that we would be looking at on audit as well. And as long as the information is available to us, we would be able to do that. again, it may be that another agency is in a better position to keep track of that information and determine that the credit should be allowed. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to try to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deborah, do you monitor, how would you monitor employees to make sure that there was, if there, we started with a company with 180 employees, that there was 180 or more the following year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, having just seen the amendments myself, I'm just kind of speaking off the top of my head here, but what I would envision is if the taxpayer is claiming the credit, they would file a form with us that certifies there have been no changes in the number of employee positions, hours, or wages due to this credit, and it would be something that we would have to audit and determine whether or not that was accurate based on employment department information, records of the taxpayer. And I'm sure some of that would be subjective in nature if you see that the employee count goes down, but the taxpayer says it's not because of the credit, it's because of changing business conditions. There would be some judgment calls in that, I'm sure.
Mr. Chair, question of staff. Is there any indication, I see no indication in the amendments, but if a company was entitled to a $10,000 credit in year one, and their total employment went from 150 people down to 100, would they lose one-third of the $10,000 credit that they'd previously been entitled to? There's no indication on that, or would the credit just go away?
Representative Butler, I believe the credit would go away. There's no scale. I don't see any language that would permit a scaling.
So the recapture is 100% in year two?
Right.
Okay, without penalty.
Right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, if I may, that is a good question because the bill simply says they're not eligible for the credit. So it may be that they would be denied the credit on the year that it was claimed, then giving rise to additional
interest,
which
tax.
Could incur some interest. So it's not
right.
Entirely clear on that point.
Right. That's lines 16 through 19 on page 2 of the dash 1. And that's certainly what it appears to say. Other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Butler.
I do not want Representative Nathanson to lose heart over these questions. This is a good bill. It's a good idea. It's a good program. These are questions that all of which we can work through. And so take heart. We're with you. So.
And it's a good thing you stayed because you're likely to end up on an informal work group trying to make that happen. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. And as you are looking at these things and come up with other concerns, we would like to know about them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And he's not yet here. Let's stand at ease for a moment. We expect one more witness. Oh, yes.
And I didn't want to address it while we had a witness, but a couple comments because I know Representative Nathanson is taking notes. I know we just get on public record for
please.
For
things. Go ahead.
And I share Representative Butler's sentiments. I think this is a wonderful idea, and I look forward to supporting this. While we're talking about it on public record, there's two things that jump out at me that maybe you can address as we move forward. One of them comes from my experience in banking for many years, and specifically related to line 8 on the dash 1 bill. You're talking about newly manufactured and never before used. I understand why the bill is printed that way. I would suggest that we shouldn't do new equipment. That probably makes sense for something that's very small, but a lot of Oregon businesses, whether they're cast part makers, die part makers, even mills, even had an experience of a cherry processing plant in the Dalles that uses really big equipment, and when I mean big, I mean as big as this room. It's not something that you go out and buy every 2 years. It's something that may have been used for a different purpose in Alabama, and it's got a 30-year life to it, and it's a brand-new investment for this company in Hood River or Portland or anywhere else in Oregon, but I think new is probably too constrained. The second point would be line 11 of the Dash 1 bill, where it talks about installed or used in a facility located in the state. I understand the installed portion. The used portion, I think, is too loose and needs to be narrowed down. because I think by this language, the 25 pickup trucks that my company has would qualify for a tax exemption. That's not what we want to do. They're certainly used in our business. They're machinery. We use them in and around our yard, but we also drive them around town and everything else. And that's not what we want to do, I don't think. I don't think we want to give tax credits for pickup trucks and things like that. So maybe we do. And if we do, that's great for my business.
Thank you for those additional comments. We're going to stand at ease for a few moments. We're expecting one more witness who I expect will be here shortly. And so we'll stand at ease and don't wander off very far because we'll want to get started as soon as he arrives. Mr. Lundquist.
Thank you very much, Chair Barnhart. I apologize for being out. I was being courtenized if you can all agree with the Senate President.
Oh. That's a verb I hadn't heard before.
Understood.
President of the Oregon Business Association, I'm here in support of the investment tax credit. This is a policy that we put forth last time with OBA as well. As we look at what makes this state healthy, what makes this a good economy, what provides for our schools, et cetera, you know all those issues. Certainly, the health of the small business community is very much a part of that. And as an association, we have come before you. We have come before other bodies. In most cases, we're not asking for things. I think all believe that, whether it's public education support or the rainy day fund or whatever it might be. But at the same time, we think we do need to be aware of the fact that our businesses need to be as economically viable as possible. Particularly on this bill has an opportunity, has some fairly small limits in there, and we agree with that because it is a small business sector that we are trying to support in this endeavor. And so many times I think we look at the aspect of, you know, how do we bring businesses in, it's encourage businesses to come into the state. No, this is not about that. This is about keeping the businesses healthy and viable that are there at the present time. And I'll just give a personal example of how we the environment we find ourselves in the business climate. So I happen to raise mint as my main crop at the present time. And my competition is basically not domestically. My really tough competition is from India and China. They're bringing in mint oil for about 60 cents on the dollar that we need for our production. They're blending it. It's not the same quality, but over time, the consumers tend to get used to that. But this is a good example, and I only use my personal here, and don't take it in that manner. But there are businesses here that are competing internationally, small businesses that are competing internationally, even though it doesn't look like it on the surface. An investment tax credit that will allow me to keep my machinery up to date, that will allow me to be efficient, that's part of the process. So I don't want to go on to a, you understand the issues, I think. I'll certainly answer any questions. But this is a small business help that keeps us competitive. It's not about bringing new business to the state. It's about keeping our business environment such that we can have the well-financed schools and all the other things that go along with it. Thank you for your attention, and I'd answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you. The questions for Lynn, Representative Butler.
Just one quick question, Mr. Chair. And Lynn, thank you very much for bringing your personal perspective to it. And, of course, from Powell Butte, we see things differently.
Sure.
We view Oregon League from Oregon differently from a different perspective. Lynn, what of this tax credit? It's presently set up that it sunsets once you get to $30 million. Is this from the Oregon Business Association's perspective? Is this something that we would want to try and encourage existing businesses within well-established communities, or would we want to do more outreach? For instance, and I'm thinking, and please don't misunderstand where I'm coming from, but if I said this applies in this credit would apply in counties that are under 1 million people or under 700,000 people.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, We had not made a, I guess, have come forth with that particular idea. I think there's great merit in that because we all recognize that rural Oregon, particularly very rural Oregon, has had some really tough times. My district used to include John Day. That's not your where you live. And certainly those areas are struggling. If that would make the bill have a little, what do I say, more economic value to the legislative process, certainly we'll be open to that. Because there are businesses that are, I mean, we forget. Forget's the wrong terminology. We just do not travel the state enough as individuals, in general speaking, to really understand one another. And you know what it's like in that part. So I would say yes.
Thanks. Follow up.
Yes, please.
Chair. Lynn, and now I'm thinking very, very specifically, and not with regard to size of county. Perhaps if the bill was limited to the expenditure of this $30 million worth of credits in counties that were materially affected by the ONC and the Federal Forest Safety Net over the next until $30 million was expended, how would that would the Oregon Business Association take any umbrage with that approach, as opposed to saying because most of your members are in very well established larger metropolitan communities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, no, we would that would be fine. I mean, we want to make this so it's as useful as possible. Be practical about it. And it's not about our members. This is not about our members. This is about what's good for Oregon.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Other questions? I have a couple.
Okay.
Do you manufacture your own mint oil and then sell the oil, or do you sell the plants themselves?
We sell, Representative Barnhart, we sell the oil, and we also sell leaves. I have a neighbor that does the processing on the mint oil.
Just
a little bit off the subject since you opened the door. Actually, our leaves.
Actually, you opened the door. Talking about your farm.
Our leaves production goes primarily to Germany. I'm a newcomer in the field. I haven't been in it but about 15 years. And the domestic market was already basically taken up for the leaf, and so we've gone into Germany. Who have, by the way, very high organic standards. Not organic, but I'd say pesticide standards.
Well, you know, farmers that do well in Oregon, as you very well know, are ones who have managed to brand their product and make it something special. And what caught my ear was your comment that the oil, that you have tough competition in China and India, but their oil is of lower quality. Maybe you ought to consider wholesaling your own rather at a much higher price to the right markets.
Well, Representative Barnhart, you know, one of the things in agriculture we face is what we call cottonization from the standpoint we're not producing commodities, we're trying to produce specific products. Unfortunately, oil is such a little bit goes so such a long distance that a 55-gallon barrel of oil will, you know, do a lot for Wrigley's and others, and so we don't have quite the competition. The farmer's market doesn't work.
No.
For the
you would have to package it in somewhat smaller quantities.
There you go.
Yes, you would. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm from Mint Country, so let me just share with you one thing that you want that you really want to do is come around Mint Country when the stills are operating and love that smell. Mm. And number two, I want you to be assured that Wrigley does not buy any mint oil from China or India.
Okay.
They know the difference between good mint oil, American mint oil, and foreign mint oil. And the final thing I will say about mint oil is that if you got a barrel of mint oil, it's just like having a barrel of 1040 in the basement, because it never goes bad. It'll be there for 20, 30, 40, 50 years until the price comes. And of course, that's what farmers do, is they play that price game. So.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 3246? Not seeing anyone, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3246 and open a public hearing on House and on. We might as well open both of the other bills, House Bill 3504 and House Bill 3505.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, both bills, 3404 and 05, address or modify Oregon's credit for qualified research. The current credit is 5% of amount of research costs above a base level. So whatever exceeds that base, 5% is the basis for the credit. What these two bills do, they each expand the credit to include payments to energy research consortia, so they expand the base of the credit. Where they differ is how they expand the value of the credit. 3504 leaves the 5% unchanged but modifies the maximum credit from $2 million to $4 million per taxpayer per year, whereas House Bill 3505 leaves the maximum at $2 million but increases the applicable percentage from 5% to 10%. And I'm looking at a sheet of paper you should have in your packet titled House Bill 3504 and House Bill 3505. And there are very preliminary revenue check numbers. 3504, it's about $4 million in 07-09 and $10 million in 09-11. And 3505 is $2 million in 07-09 and $6 million in 09-11. And there's another table there that I want to point your direction to, which is a summation of a table from a Department of Revenue Statistics publication that shows the claim use of the credit, the claimed and the use of the credit for tax year 2004 for the corporations. And one thing I wanted to point to your attention was for the total amount of the credit in 04, just about $37 million of credits were claimed on the tax returns, but only about $6 million of the credits were actually used to reduce liability. So that's about 16% usage that reduces tax liability in that year.
Is it carried forward?
It does have a 5-year carry forward.
And why would a company carry it forward?
Well, because of the $2 million cap, that's all they can claim in the first year. And if they had costs that were, say, $4 or $5 million, they would claim $2 million, and then they would carry forward the $3 million as well as whatever couldn't be used. So it depends on what their liability was. But the unused credit in the first year would be carried over to the second year, and so on through up to 5 years, and any unused credits remaining at that point would simply expire.
Okay.
So that's one of the subtleties about coming up with a revenue impact for that, is how much of it can be used in that initial year and how much gets carried forward. And that all depends, a significant player in that is the liability of the companies that claim this credit. And as you can see in that table below, only 178, we're talking about 178 companies that have claimed the credit so far. So that's the universe of the corporations.
For tax year 04.
For tax year 04.
About 78 of them actually used it. The others didn't owe any taxes, perhaps?
Correct. They either had losses or, they didn't owe any taxes, so they couldn't use the credit. So that the difference there, that roughly $30 million, will be carried over to tax year 2005.
Or they zeroed out their tax liability using the credit.
Yes, they used part of it. What, when the 100 companies didn't use any of it.
100 didn't use any.
So the 78 that did use some of it, they may have used just a few dollars of the credit, or they may have used their entire credit and still had a remaining liability.
Representative Boger.
What he's basically saying is these aren't companies that are making big bucks.
That's right. And none of them seem to have filed for maximum credits, unless there was one very large one among those 27.
Well, in 2004, Mr. Chair, the maximum credit was $500,000.
Okay.
The $2 million limit was just passed last session with House Bill 31. And that $2 million limit takes effect in 2006. And we won't have those tax returns for another year. So
we don't know what the effect of the change in the maximum credit is until we actually seen the 2006 returns.
Correct.
And we won't compare them to the 2004 ones.
Correct. I'm not able to make that comparison because we don't have those returns.
Okay.
So the 2004 is the most recent information for which we have data.
All right. Other questions for Chris? At this moment, we don't have anyone signed up to be heard from the public on these measures. Is there anyone here who would like to be heard today on House Bill 3504, 30, or 3505? I don't see anyone. Let me just add that, given what Chris has just told us, it would appear to me that it's a bit premature for us to consider this issue again until we get at least some data from the change that we made last time. What are people's thoughts about that? Representative Butler, you're one of the sponsors of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I am indeed, and I met earlier. It was my pleasure to meet earlier with Chris on the accumulated data, and my observation with Chris is, Chris, at best, because you don't have access to the 2006 data, you're having to extrapolate this from 2004, where the credit really wasn't implemented, and basically the answer is yes. So if we've got to extrapolate that information, I think I would characterize my position with Chris at that point was a little uncomfortable with the numbers that we could actually put a stake in their heart and say this is what it's going to generate. So I am, but by the same token, Representative Witt is the chief sponsor of the bill, and I don't want to.
Did I miss that? Yes, I did. I did miss that, Representative Witt.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that we're extrapolating a little far out here, and there's a little discomfort in that at this point.
So at this point, you wouldn't be uncomfortable about us waiting on these issues?
Not at all.
Thank you. I think that's helpful as we look at our planning for the next few weeks. As I look at the agenda for the committee, we don't have very many sessions left during which we ought to be considering House bills. Now, the normal rule that applies to most committees on scheduling doesn't apply to this one, but at the same time, the Speaker's told me that he wants us to act as though it did. And so that's very helpful to me to know that perhaps we can wait on these two bills. And with that, unless there's something else, we'll close the public hearings on House Bill 3504 and 3505, and we are adjourned.